You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey you, welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. I am not only going to field a couple of your questions, but I have a quick conversation with the incredible porn director and creator of Pink and White Productions, Shine Louise Houston, because Shine has just a couple of days left of her Indiegogo for her new film, Chemistry Eases the Pain. So we chat a little bit about what that's about. We talk about porn. And if you want to support, of course, there is a link right in the show notes for this episode, or you can head to sexgetsreal.com to check that out. I also just want to let you know, if you're listening to this episode when it drops on February 23rd, or actually it's February 24th. Yeah, on February 24th, Explore More Summit 2019 starts tomorrow on February 25th. This thing has been 5 months in the making. We've spent about 1,000 hours on it. It's the favorite thing that I do every year. It's our fifth summit, and this year's theme is finding power in personal and collective pleasure. These conversations are some of the most powerful conversations I have all year, and I would love for you to be a part of it, whether you have a chance to see one talk or several talks or maybe even all 27 over the course of the 10 days. It's totally free if you sign up at exploremoresummit.com and watch the talks as they unfold. There's 2 to 3 per day. There's videos, there's workbooks. It is such an incredible experience. The Facebook group is full of people who are just vibrating with excitement, and we're going to spend these 10 days investigating everything to do with pleasure, healing, bodies, relationships, all of it. And I would love to have every single Sex Gets Real listener join us for that, because it's like the podcast times 1,000. It's so much fun. So, on to your questions, and then I will share with you my little conversation with Shine. So this first question came in from Curious Mom, and it was actually perfectly timed because you'll hear that my answer does involve the summit. And Curious Mom wrote in with a subject line of parenting and sexuality. Hi, Dawn. I'm a new listener to your podcast, and I really, really enjoy it. Thank you for the beauty you are putting out into the world. I have been beyond happily married for 10 and a half years, and I'm the mother of 2 incredible daughters, ages 7 and 11. My question is about parenting and teaching healthy sexuality and sexual exploration to our children. I was raised in an extremely conservative environment where sexual exploration was absolutely, positively off limits no matter what. I'm a major rule follower, so somehow, in order to follow that ridiculous standard, I seemed to have completely turned off any desires or curiosities I might have had. I'm learning that as a 31-year-old, I am, for the very first time, doing and learning about a lot of what would be healthy and very normal for kids and teenagers to explore. I'm also having the time of my life getting to know myself and my partner in ways that I've totally missed out on. So I know what not to do and say to my daughters, namely that they'll go to hell if they have sex, but that as soon as they're married, they'll have all the sex they want and it'll be wonderful, blah. I know that I want them to eventually have a healthy understanding of all the types of sex because, wow, my very narrow, limited understanding of sex resulted in me missing out on so much for so long and being so generally confused about sex. But the reality is, I don't have a personal example of how I want to impart a healthy sexuality onto them. I'm pretty proud of the ways I've intrinsically figured some of this out, including the fact that they've both known all the body parts' names and functions for years, way more than I knew in my 20s. They seem to feel safe and comfortable coming to me with questions because they do so often. We talk a lot about consent and safety, in general and in regards to our bodies, and we can have conversations about our emotions. Plus, they do know all of the basics about how babies are made, but with my 11-year-old, we're moving into the preteen years, and it feels like it's time for a few more layers to be added in the discussion. I'm wondering if you've ever done a podcast about parenting and sexuality, or if you have some resources you can direct me to, because I'm worried that I don't know what I don't know, you know? Thanks again for all you do and taking the time to read this. I'm looking forward to your summit. So for Curious Mom, I wrote back immediately and I was like, yes, sign up for the summit. You'll totally want to see Melissa Carnegie from Sex Positive Families. And so that is absolutely one thing I'll recommend. And even if you're listening to this episode weeks or months or years after it was originally aired, you can always buy access to previous summits. So I definitely recommend signing up for 2019 Summit because on day one, which is tomorrow for those of you listening to the episode when it comes out, on February 25th, 2019, I have a conversation with the creator of Sex Positive Families. And Melissa has some of the most incredible perspectives about how we can raise sex positive kids, how we can be sex positive parents, how we can help take away the need to know everything, take the pressure off of ourselves to be perfect, the hierarchy, how we can be more vulnerable, and also how we can help foster curiosity and learn alongside our kids. Melissa has such a phenomenal understanding that regardless of how long you've been on the planet, you're still a full human being with full autonomy and agency over your own body and your own pleasure. So how can we build that into our parenting when we're dealing with young people? There are incredible resources on Sex Positive Families website. And of course, Melissa's conversation at Explore More Summit is all about sex positive parenting. So that's one thing that I cannot recommend enough. I also highly recommend checking out Nadine Thornhill. Now, Nadine's been on the podcast twice, so you can look for that. And if you Google Nadine's name, you'll see Nadine has a YouTube channel and a website that's all about talking to kids and teaching kids about sex. Contrary to the pop culture myths that we see, it's not a one and done conversation. Ideally, it's something that we literally start from birth, modeling and talking to them about in age-appropriate ways so that there's never a point when it's not a part of the conversation. And it sounds like, Curious Mom, you've been doing some pretty phenomenal stuff. I mean, if they know all the names of their body parts, they ask questions, they know where babies come from, you talk about safety and consent, and you have conversations about emotions, like that right there is kind of the gold mine of how we can set young people up to feel comfortable in their bodies, to know these bodies are theirs to delight in and to know, which is the foundation of safety and consent. If I can't know my body and understand my edges, if I don't know what yes and no feels like in my body, it's pretty hard to communicate boundaries and to stand up for myself and to feel a sense of agency. So it sounds like you're on the right track. One other thing that I would recommend, and I did email this to Curious Mom as well, is Corey Silverberg has two incredible books that are my go-to books. I literally buy them for every single friend that has a kid. And they are What Makes a Baby, which is a bigger picture book that's great for like 5 to 7 year olds, maybe even younger, depending on you know, your kid. And then there's another book that's for preteens that's really great for like the 9 to 12 or 13 year old age range called Sex is a Funny Word. The first time I read that book, I cried because if I had had that book when I was younger, things probably would have unfolded very differently for me. And I had to move through some grief around that, but also joy that it exists and that it's out in the world. Another thing that's really awesome about the Sex Positive Families website is they have a reading list that is for every age of human, including adults and parents and those of us who are a little bit older and have been on the planet a little longer. But they have over 150 books on their recommended reading list, all about bodies, consent, gender, sex, all the things. So no matter who you are or what age you are, you're going to want to go check out that reading list and probably stock up or make some requests at your library. So those are the places that I would start. And then of course, Melissa at Sex Positive Families and Nadine Thornhill and Corey Silverberg, they have links to all kinds of other people doing incredible work in this space. But those three you can't go wrong with. They're a great place to start. As your kids move into their teen years, I also highly recommend introducing them to Scarlatine. Scarlatine is one of the most comprehensive, inclusive, beautiful resources in the world for young people to talk about their bodies, dating, sex, fears, shame, gender, identity. All of it is beautifully sensitive and very age appropriate for younger and older teens. And that, I think, should become a staple for pretty much all households that have young people. And even for those of us who are older, who are just kind of coming into sex positivity and into being curious about our bodies and our identities, you will find so much permission and information about literally everything on Scarlatine. So I also recommend filing that away and then maybe using that as an activity to do with your kids, or even just offering it to them so that they can do it in their own time and then checking in with them every once in a while to see if they've got questions about what they find there. Thank you so much for writing in, Curious Mom. I'm so glad that you're going to be joining us for the summit. I know my email to you made it clear I had missed that last line you wrote about I am looking forward to your summit, but thank you for writing in, and thank you so much for just being so open and so generous with the ways that you're raising your daughters. It sounds like you are doing some really beautiful things with them and really laying a foundation of permission, and all of us could have used more of that. So thank you for being an incredible mom. Thanks for writing in with your questions. I hope those resources get you and others started down the path of sex positive parenting and finding the resources you need. And thank you so much for listening to the show. I got an email from E, and the subject line is why I love the current format, or screw the haters, you're awesome. Good morning, Dawn. I've been a listener for a couple of years now, and in a recent episode, you talked about losing some listeners due to the current format and focus of the show. I can completely understand those feelings of disappointment and second guessing. Your show as it is right now, as you have made it, and focusing on the things you find important and challenging is exactly the kind of show I personally need and love. Your insight, wisdom, and kick-ass guests are the highlight of my week. Yours is the only podcast I have notifications turned on for. You, Sex Gets Real, and your guests have helped me find my second career and have helped give me the courage to take the next steps in fulfilling my dreams. It's hard to be told that something you put so much of yourself into isn't to someone's tastes, and it's hard as a fan when something you love has changed to something less to your liking. All of that is true, and all of that is okay. But there's a third experience. Those of your listeners who love and appreciate the new Sex Gets Real. So, take their feedback as exit interviews. So take their feedback. Exit interviews are a thing for a reason, but please don't let it get you down or make you change a thing you feel strongly about. You are doing good work in the world, and your podcast has touched many people in profound ways. Oh, thank you so much, E. Yeah, it's kind of funny because even though I get emails from folks, it's, you know, not constant. And sometimes it does feel like I'm just speaking out into the void, especially because I pre-record. So it's just me and my microphone. And sometimes it's kind of like, is anybody out there? So I do appreciate all the emails that I get. I know that I can't reply to all of them, nor can I reply to all of them. And emails like this do matter. They feel so good. So thank you so much, E, for writing in and sharing. I have been feeling into that so deeply lately that while the podcast numbers might be down a little bit, and part of that is also because of FOSTA and SESTA, it's just getting harder and harder to promote any kind of podcast that's about sex. But I'm also starting to really realize that so many of you who are here and who are listening are really feeling connected with the work that I'm doing. And I receive that fully. So thank you so much for taking a few minutes, E, to write in and to share your experience of being with the show through all of these years and all of these changes. It feels really nourishing to be where I am now. And I'm glad that I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not, or to pretend to be interested in things that I'm not. The show gets to change right along with me, and hopefully all of you get to experience that change and come along too. And just because, why not have a little balance? I also got an email from Unimportant. The subject says email, and the message body says, I am feeling a little unimportant. You encourage your listeners to write to you, and that each and every message gets read and savored, which, after a lot of internal struggle, I did. That was 2 months ago. I'm not sure what I expected out of writing. It was about rough sex and dealing with a partner who was the victim of molestation as a child, but I had at least hoped to get a got it and maybe an email talking about my questions. Instead, it feels like my insecurities disappeared into the void. Actually, what it really feels like is that I or my insecurities are not LGBTQIAPK enough for you to respond to. It makes me want to say that straight people have questions about sex too, and maybe you overlook or forget that from time to time. So I did write back to Unimportant, and this is something to just offer to all of you. The truth is, I do read every single email that comes in. I don't always read them as soon as they come in because my inbox is a pretty intense place, but I do read every single email. What I am not able to do is reply to every single email because I have so many things going on that I'm trying desperately to hold together as beautifully and tenderly and imperfectly as I can. Between Explore More Summit and my coaching clients, between the other business that I run, which is producing summits for other businesses, to doing the podcast, and then just even trying to find time to take care of me and go to therapy and eat food, I only have so much time in every day. And as much as I would love to be able to respond to every single email in a timely way, acknowledging all the things that you share, the truth is if I did that, I wouldn't be able to take care of me. I also want to note that certain questions require certain types of sensitivity or expertise that maybe I don't have. And sometimes emails will go many, many, many months before I have an expert come on the show or before I feel ready to be able to tend to that question. So just know that if you've sent an email, as long as it wasn't disrespectful or nonsensical, that it's sitting in my queue. And that is something that causes me stress and that I worry about constantly, but they're there. Sometimes I'm waiting for a couple of questions on a topic to come in so that I can build a conversation around it. Sometimes I feel desperately unskilled and being able to field some of the questions. And I either know it's just going to take some time and experience to move in that direction, or I know there's a specific expert or two I really want to talk to. But sometimes it takes me many months or even a year or two to get certain people on the show because they're busy too. So I do appreciate every email. And I've grappled with whether or not I should set up some type of autoresponder, but there are many of you who will send me multiple emails and thanks, and I don't want this autoresponder to become just something that people don't even read, because it's either an all or nothing thing, right? So all of that is to say, I validate completely that sending that email took courage, and that for so many of you, you send me things that you've probably never said to anybody. And for some of you, you write things that you're barely able to admit to yourself. I hold all of those so, so, so preciously. And I do want you to know that even if I don't explicitly reply back to your email, or even if you don't hear your exact email written or read on the show, that every single email does come in and it lives in my bones with me. And sometimes when I'm answering one question, that answer is partially informed by other questions that I've gotten that are in a similar vein or in a similar kind of realm. So there's a lot that's going into this labor that I'm doing for all of you. And my hope is that, one, you'll continue trusting me with your stories and your questions, that you'll continue finding the courage to send in everything that you send in. I do always want more. I want you to share and ask questions so that I can keep bringing new and interesting voices and stories to the show. And I hope that you can hold that I'm doing all of this the best that I can, which is to say, I know it is not enough and it is imperfect, and all I can do is the best I can do. And then when I can do better, I will do better. And some of you might get a response and some of you might not. Some of you might get your emails on the show. Some of you might not. But all of it contributes to the show, because all of it does come into me and help inform me about the things that I need to learn, the things I want to talk about, the places I want to go, the hopes and dreams that I have for all of us, the next book that I'm going to read. All of your emails help feed that. And what ends up happening is this show. So thank you so much for supporting me. Thank you for letting me know that it was feeling tender. Also, please know that there is no barometer at all around being enough of anything. I field listener questions from straight white dudes all the time, and from, you know, privileged middle-class white women all the time. And yes, we try to center the most marginalized, but there is no marker or barrier for who deserves or gets anything. It's just a matter of, how do I take all these threads that you generously keep sending my way and weave them into things that are helpful? Because the last thing I want to do is field a question that I am ill-prepared for or that I have no experience in, and potentially make you feel worse or cause harm. And especially when emails involve things like incest, molestation, abuse, I know I need to handle those so very, very, very carefully. And so sometimes the things that are particularly edgy or painful or traumatic get held for a while until I feel like I can, and or I know someone who can help me to do that work together and then offer it back out into the world. So thank you so much for trusting me with your feelings of disappointment, unimportant. I appreciate that. And to all of you who are listening, please know I always, always, always want to hear from you. I always love hearing your stories, your questions, the things that you're grappling with, your successes, your losses, your grief, your frustrations. And while I might not be able to reply to all of you or handle all of the questions in a way that you wish that I could, know that it still matters. that it still does on some level inform the show, inform me, inform the conversations that are happening, and that it's all part of this massive tapestry that we are making together here at Sex Gets Real. I have one last email. It's a little bit long, but you will hear why in just a moment. And then my conversation with Shine Louise Houston, because we need to not only pay for our porn, but support these incredible people who are out in the world making erotic, pornographic, sexy content for us, like Chemistry Eases the Pain, which is Shine's new film that she's fundraising for. So stay tuned for that conversation and for ways that you can help support Shine, even if you don't have money that you can toss her way. And then we will be wrapping up because I have to frantically go finish up a whole bunch of loose ends before Explore More starts tomorrow. So this email came in from Adam. And it says, "Dear Dawn, I didn't want to start like everyone else who writes to you. But unfortunately, I, like all the others, absolutely love your podcast. I know I'm not unique when I say that I find it thought-provoking and absorbing. However, it also makes me sad, in part because it makes me feel like I am missing out, that my life is missing that total physical and emotional connection that is possible. And then it makes me feel confused, down, frustrated, as it feels like I should be able to expect to be able to have that type of relationship, but my situation just won't allow it. So I feel caught, and that whatever I do is wrong. As you can probably guess, I'm a guy who is lacking a physical connection to his wife, and having a yearning which is unsatisfied and find impossible to talk about. Therefore, I keep my feelings bottled up and unsaid. I feel like I am sexually intelligent, and when I hear you speak about caring for the other person's pleasure and that sex is about connecting and not simply about your or their orgasm, but sensuality, touching, and something much deeper, I feel like I am so much in that place that I totally understand what you mean. I long for a physical connection, not just sexually, but closeness, nakedness, holding, being wanted, kissing. Perhaps I feel the desire for connection more than most as I have a high libido and I am completely unsatisfied physically at home. So who am I and what's my situation? I'm a 50-year-old sporty guy. Fit, healthy, driven at work and sports. I'm married to an equally amazing woman whose drive and abilities come out in other ways. We've been together for 27 years and have two daughters, 17 and 13, who we are both very close to. Our sex life basically stopped after our second child. Even the sex to have the second baby was clinical, unemotional, and not something to look back on. As she focused on the children, being tired and homemaking, I spent the next 8 years feeling unloved, unwanted, and eventually started looking for alternative outlets for sex. I had a number of affairs and eventually got caught. We managed to pull things together and went through counseling, which brought us back together. However, sex was one thing that we never really got agreement on, even through the counselor. When I raised it a few times after we often ended up arguing again, until finally about 4 years ago, I felt enlightened after an argument about sex, and she made a heartfelt comment, "Why would anyone want to have sex with me when they know it's just going to hurt me?" It felt like a huge comment and brought me to the realization that it was not her fault and that I had been the one who hadn't realized and should have thought about her illness more. The more I thought about it, the more logical it all felt. So now, as we have no physical side and haven't had any sexual contact for 4 years, and I see no future sexual contact, I decided to see escorts to give me some release, but also to make sure that she never found out. I loved your episode on degenerative diseases and how constant pain impacts your life. Unless constant pain is a part of your life, it is impossible to understand how it can totally envelop your whole being. No one can understand how pain makes you become quick to anger, quick to frustration, quick to depression, and no one else will understand what it's like to live with someone who is suffering from constant pain. My wife has rheumatoid arthritis and has had it for many years. She's had multiple operations, such as having half to a 3/4 of an inch of each of the bones in her feet being taken out, knee operations, her C1 and C2 neck bones being fused to her skull. She needs an elbow replacement, possibly two, and possibly both shoulders. She has Sjögren's syndrome, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, and has to put the thickest cream in her eye just to be able to sleep through a whole night without getting a searing pain from dry eyes that she wakes up. It's impossible for me to imagine what she's going through, and I try to support her as much as I can. I now think that she actually physically can't have sex. Her wrists and elbows are too weak to do anything to me without pain. Her neck being fused to her skull means she can only open her mouth in a limited way, and any long periods with an odd position just leads to muscular pain and cramps. And with the arthritis in her hips, she just finds any kind of thrusting painful. But I don't think I can talk to her about it, as I think psychologically admitting that you can't do something crystallizes it and makes it more real than avoiding the subject. I think she would go into a deeper depression if she felt she couldn't keep me. That sounds arrogant, maybe not me, but realizing that she can't do certain things that normal people do. Her illness makes her depressed. But she is incredible, as she doesn't let it get in her way of looking after our girls, taking them to piano, flute, swimming. She is a great mother. My daughters do notice her temper, and I explain to them as being a part of the pain that she lives through. I'm not sure what I want from you. I would love for you to affirm that I'm in a difficult situation. I know you'll say I should talk openly with my wife, and I think I'd feel better about being open that I have physical needs, even if I'm not open about what I've actually been doing. But I do feel that by talking to her about her limitations, it will force her to admit she can't physically do anything sexually, which means that might psychologically destabilize her. It's one thing to think you can't do many things and be depressed about your life as your body disintegrates, but it's another to think that because you can't connect with your husband, he is going to start connecting with other lovers and worry that you could possibly end up losing someone when he finds someone else. I am not looking for someone else, but I don't think she would believe me given the affair I had before. It would be interesting to hear your take on my situation. Adam. Ugh. Well, Adam, I definitely want to affirm that your situation is complicated and difficult. And yes, sometimes this is what life looks like. It sounds like you have a lot of admiration and love for your wife and your daughters. It sounds like you've had some realizations and moved through some different phases together. And it sounds like there are needs that aren't getting met, and probably on both ends. One of the things that I'm thinking about is I had this beautiful conversation with Isabel Abbott for the summit, and Isabel has chronic illness and chronic pain, and significantly so. And she's talked about how so much of where she is now is realizing that she can't wait for pain to be over in order for her to experience pleasure. So she has been working on finding ways that pleasure and pain can coexist so that she's not putting her pleasure on hold. And she also talked about how she doesn't have the energy to have any fucks to give anymore about performing anything, that all she can do is just show up as herself and hope that the people who love her will accept that raw, non-performative version of who she is with this body and with this pain. So the answer that I want to, or the thoughts that I want to offer you are imperfect and incomplete. And here's what they are. One, I always think that there are ways that we can have conversations with the people in our lives that would help honor and validate their experience, that would invite in some curiosity and some tenderness. And it might take multiple tries, because for many of us, we have experienced betrayal around truth. We have been shut down around truth. We don't trust that people really want to hear our truths, maybe because we've got lots of evidence that supports that. So there's wise reasons why when people might try to initiate a vulnerable conversation, other people might shut it down or get defensive. Sometimes we have to demonstrate consistently that we really mean it, that we really do want to have these conversations. And I wonder what it would be like for you to, without any kind of agenda for yourself, offer a space, maybe multiple times, for your wife to share what is it like for her to experience any kind of pleasure. What does her pleasure look like with the pain? Is there pleasure in food? Is there pleasure in your daughters? Is there pleasure in certain colors and smells and sounds? Does she have space for pleasure? And what might the two of you do if she's interested in finding more avenues to pleasure, considering her body and how it is? I think we get so much pain in looking back at how things used to be. And I wonder what it would look like to say, here's where we are. And what might pleasure look like considering where we are? And then investigating that. What smells, what sights, what touches, no matter how delicate, might bring pleasure? What experiences and feelings move her closer to pleasure and joy and aliveness and satisfaction? What is she hungry for in her life? Maybe it's not sex. Maybe she's hungry for new experiences, new books, seeing your daughters do things. But just in being able to engage her with a different experience of her body might create some new energy and some new curiosities for the two of you. I also think this is one of the reasons why the ways that we've culturally been raised around sex can be so, so harmful to us. They're just so deeply ableist. When our bodies change, either because of age or illness or accidents or trauma or simply because of how they are, the ways that we have sex changes. And there's so much creativity available to us in the ways that we erotically connect with each other. It doesn't even have to involve touch. I highly recommend checking out Leah Lakshmi Pyepsna Samarasinghe's new book, Care Work, Dreaming Disability Justice. There's some essays in that book about disabled sex. And there's a group that Leah has been a part of for years called Sins Invalid. And it's a show put on by disabled queer people of color to talk about their sexual experiences. And one of the questions that Leah's mentor, I believe the person's name is Dory Midnight, asks is, what kind of sex does your disability allow you to have that able-bodied people can't or don't even know is possible? And for some people in paralyzed bodies and in bodies with a variety of different disabilities, sex might be, you know, wiggling a couple of fingers and an earlobe. And that kind of sex can be exquisite and connecting and beautiful. But we have to be open to that being something that can satisfy us. And so I guess my question for you, Adam, is if your wife was able to say, these kinds of things might feel accessible to me or they might feel pleasurable, but they had nothing whatsoever to do with your dick and intercourse, and it could be hot and erotic by watching something together and maybe just holding hands, is that something that you could be open to and feel erotically charged by? I also think that sometimes our lives and our situations are really complicated. And sometimes, because of a variety of circumstances and situations that we find ourselves in, we have really tough choices that we have to make. Working with a professional, like an escort, can be one way that we can still show up in our lives as a parent, as a spouse, and feeling validated in our needs and our desires. It might not be something that some people would consider ethical or an option. And yes, your wife would probably be crushed if she found out. And that is something that you will have to navigate if it ever comes up. But there are professionals out there who do the work that they do from a very professional perspective for a reason. They're able to hold that space very tenderly, to keep it within the confines of your agreement so that you can continue moving through your life in the ways that you do and showing up in the ways that you need to. So yeah, it's complicated. And yeah, sometimes we need to make tough decisions because the choices available to us, none of them feel quite right. And if working with escorts helps you to continue to show up in your marriage with grace and to show up as a parent feeling nourished and fed, then that's the choice that feels right for you. And it's not for me to tell you that's wrong. I also am thinking Chris Maxwell Rose from Pleasure Mechanics, who are also some sex educators that I totally adore. Their work is so important. Chris talks about how our desires are bigger than our lives can hold. Because our desire, our erotic selves, our sexual selves are so much made up of our imagination, our creativity, our connection to nature and to life and each other, of course, the things that we want, the things we dream of, are bigger than our lives could possibly hold. And Chris talks about how there's maturity in us coming to a place where we realize that's true and still being able to affirm that our desires are valid and real and that we may not be able to live them out or to experience them in this lifetime. And so I just want to offer that too. Maybe there's something inside of that that you could play with. You know, how can you validate that your desires for connection and for touch and for sex are real and true and important? And maybe, at least right now, your life can't hold all of the things that you want. So how can you validate yourself while doing it in a sustainable way, so that you can continue showing up for these relationships that are important to you? I think there's a lot of opportunity for where you go next. Continuing to work with escorts or trying to be really curious about your wife and what her relationship to pleasure is or is not right now. Ways that the two of you can start to get curious about disability justice and disability sex and different ways to connect with each other in meaningful, connected, vulnerable ways that embraces and allows for her body to be exactly what it is and without it needing to be anything different. That does require breaking up with some long-held stories and some very, very strongly prescribed cultural scripts. But there are people doing it. There are so many people with so many different kinds of disabilities, from quadriplegics to people with MS to people who are all kinds of different neurodivergent and in bodies that require casts and canes and chairs and all kinds of other things, who are having amazing, incredible, slow, awkward, disabled sex. And maybe you can turn to them for some mentorship, some wisdom, some ideas, because you are not the only person who has been in this situation, and your wife is not the only person who has been in this situation. There are other people out there who are living and thriving and creating new ways of being in bodies just like this. So thank you so much for trusting me with your story. It is hard and it is messy, and there is so much potential inside of it, even if it feels like there isn't. And I also just want to validate, like, your wife deserves pleasure. Your wife deserves connection. Your wife deserves to be trusted and asked what she wants, and for there to be creativity around experiencing and experimenting around that. And she's allowed to not want to do those things right now if things feel really hard and overwhelming. So tend to yourself the best way that you can, and show up for her the best way that you can. And also consider other ways that the two of you can feel supported. Who are some folks with disabilities and chronic illness that you might connect with and ask for support around? How can your wife feel more supported so that she can do the things that she wants to do without it taking a toll on her body? Are there friends that can help drive your daughters around, or friends that can help make meals, or different types of care webs that you can create in your lives so that there's more spaciousness for the two of you? I hope that gives you lots of ideas and permission, and I just so appreciate that you trusted me with this, because you are not the only one. I know there are people listening with very, very complicated experiences, and all we can do is the best we can do and see what comes from there. Thank you to all of the listeners who wrote in. And thank you to you for listening to the show. If you have any questions, anything that you want to run by me, go to sexgetsreal.com and send that in. Patreon supporters, I'm going to release an exclusive clip from one of my favorite Explore More talks of the year. Who am I kidding? I love them all. But I'm going to pick one and put that up on Patreon just as a little teaser and a freebie for you, because I don't have time to record a bonus conversation this week, and I want you to have something great. So patreon.com/sgrpodcast if you want to support the show, exploremoresummit.com if you want to do the summit. And now here is my fun little chat with Shine Louise Houston, all about her new film that she is fundraising for. Go support it on Indiegogo, and or if you can't financially support Shine and her incredible work, spread the word, share it all the places, get your friends and your family to help throw in a couple bucks. There's some awesome bonuses and perks too. So here's me and Shine. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Shine. I am so excited to have you here.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Yes, we talk about your stuff on the show all the time.
Well, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Oh, good. Well, then I will continue doing that. So I'm really excited because you are fundraising for crowdfunding for a new film called Chemistry Eases the Pain.
Yes.
And we would love for listeners to check that out. So can you tell me a little bit about it?
So in a nutshell, it's about a young woman who's very, very queer, lesbian identified, and she winds up having a thing for a straight cis white dude. And she's trying to reconcile that internally and also socially with her friends, and we get to take a humorous look at that type of journey.
I love that so much.
We've had she's so worried about going straight.
I know that feeling. Listeners know that that is my story. that, you know, after 13 years of being in exclusively like lesbian and trans relationships, I fell for a cis queer dude. And there's real fear about losing community about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, like, you know, as I'm writing this, I'm going like, oh my God, am I so aged? Am I so dated? Haven't we already had these conversations? You know, like we've gotten over our biphobia and da 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 da. But the more I talk to people about it, the more I realize, like, oh no, this is apparently still a thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe this isn't as dated a conversation as I thought.
Yeah, I am super excited about it. And you've got some amazing people lined up and cast in the film. So can you talk a little bit about who's involved?
So our main character, Frankie, is whoops, there we go. Sorry about that. So our main character is played by Lotus Lane. And I'm really excited to work with them. They did a really great read for the character. I was then introduced to Michael Vegas, who's basically co-star or co-lead. I haven't had the opportunity to really work closely or actually meet in person, but I hear lots and lots of wonderful things about Michael. So I'm very excited to work with him.
So one of the things that I think is really awesome for people to hear is the way that you work with performers on film sets and the ways that performers get to really dictate what's going to happen, the kind of sex that they have. Can you talk a little bit about, too, what the experience is for people who participate in your films?
Well, for a project like this, I do direct a little bit more than I usually do. Like for projects like Crash Pet Series, it's 100% talent driven, which means that I'm only directing the cameras. I'm really not directing what, you know, they're doing on screen. All of that is like negotiated before we turn the cameras on. With something like Chemistry Eases the Pain, there is, you know, a pretty strong narrative. And so when I'm directing them, it's just like, you know, but we still have to keep in character. And, you know, for technical issues, like, you know, we kind of have to stay in this area. But other than that, you know, it's the, you know, the little details are up to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how exactly you like it is up to you.
So if someone was interested in supporting you in creating this new film, what are some of the perks that you're offering? What are some of the things they can do to help spread the word if they don't have money?
So some of the perks that we're offering are, hey, you get to hang out with me and Jizz. We'll take you to lunch. So that's a fun perk. We also have stuff from Play Out Underwear, gift certificates from Good Vibes. I think we have one left, maybe. I know we have some more fun gift certificates and smaller things like the pronoun pin. So we've got a range of different perks. Mm-hmm. So anything to fit your budget right now. Also, you know, if you're not going to contribute financially, there's always, you know, give us a shout out on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, whatever social media that you're using. Right now we are in the final days of this. So really we just need a big signal boost.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And so when will filming actually start?
Our shoot dates are May 20th to May 26th. So that's when all the real heavy lifting starts. But, you know, until then, we're still slogging through pre-pro. yeah.
All those moving pieces to make
yes.
the magic happen.
So many moving pieces. My goodness.
Yeah. So one of the things that I just love so much about Crash Pad and Pink and White Productions, and one of the reasons that I'm constantly sending people your way, is because, one, we want to be able to support performers, and we want to be able to support folks who are making delicious, ethical content. We also want people to pay for their porn, which I tell people all the time will literally be on my gravestone because I say it so much. So I would love for you to just kind of, as someone who literally has been in this space for over 15 years making content, like my first queer film was literally a hard copy DVD of Crash Pad.
Oh, wow. Original.
I know. Oh, so God. Awesome. And I'd love for you to just talk a little bit about, one, why it's so important for people to pay for their porn. And then you mentioned that you're really interested in exploring why it's not helpful to pit feminist and queer porn against mainstream porn. So can you talk just a little bit about that for folks?
To, you know, pay for your porn. One is, if you're paying for your porn, guess what? Those people get to make more porn. So all the porn that you like, you know, if you're not paying for it, it makes it hard for people to continue to make porn. Also, another way, paying for your porn, if you're at a site where you're actually paying for it, that probably means the people have had the right paperwork, you know, it's a legitimate business, yada, yada, yada. A lot of the stuff that you find on tube sites is pirated, or has been subject to, you know, predatory business practices. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, how do I know my stuff is ethically made and all that kind of stuff? Well, if you're paying for it, most likely this company is on the up and up. If you find stuff on Pornhub that you like, and if it actually does, you know, credit the company or the performer, find them, find their site, you know, look them up on social media, see where they're actually producing their videos, and go to them directly. You know, and I know some people are like, well, I just can't really afford it. What we do for our site is, like, you know, you can get a free membership if you help us transcode the behind the scenes, mm-hmm. either into English or any other type of foreign language, so we can continue to add subtitles, closed captions to all of our content. If you're a blogger, you can get a free membership by, you know, reviewing and blogging about our site. So, you know, you never know. And other content makers might also be interested in something like that. Mm-hmm. Just ask people. So, you know, it really helps the industry, so everybody can make a living wage and continue to make the stuff, the smut that you like, really.
Yes! More good smut.
Woo-hoo! Yes. Something that I've been noticing in the media for a while, and I finally kind of hit a limit with it, is how the media will sometimes pit queer porn, feminist porn against the mainstream. And I would like to, you know, just say, creating this type of dichotomy is not productive for the industry as a whole. You know, because even as a small business, you know, that's kind of an outlier from the mainstream, we're still part of that industry. If you're making porn, you're making porn. Like, people, like, are just going to lump you all into one category. Do you know what I mean? Porn is, you know, if you're making porn, there might not always make that distinction. But also, just to point out there, sometimes what I think people are reacting to are, you know, the narratives that mainstream porn will put out there. And some of it still is, like, very, you know, it's all centered around the pop shot or male pleasure, but a lot of that is also shifting. And so, you know, and some of the other narratives posed in mainstream are somewhat problematic. But what people forget is all the negotiation, especially if it's like rough sex or anything like that. There's a lot of negotiation that happens before, you know, there's people are getting paid, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's the mechanics that happen behind the scenes. And I think sometimes people are forgetting that, and they look at it at face value, and somehow, you know, they lose their suspension of disbelief. We all know that, you know, X-Men is like crazy fantasy and people aren't actually killing mutants. But when you watch porno, you know, and you see a rough scene, you're like, oh my God, you know, did she really like that? Was that, that looks horrible. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden when we get to porno, we kind of lose our suspension of disbelief. And, you know, as viewers, I feel like that, is a little problematic. Like, mm-hmm. I really think there should be, like, you know, somebody suggested there should be classes.
Yeah, like a porn literacy.
Yes, there you go. Porn literacy classes and, like, how to read porn, essentially.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I've been trying to encourage people to do is to not only pay for their porn, but to come out about being consumers to help destigmatize. You know, the porn doesn't have to stay in the shadows. It doesn't have to be something we hide.
Right.
Let's talk about that we enjoy it and who we enjoy and what we want more of and have conversations like we do about food and all right. the other things we like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if someone wanted to help support you mm-hmm. coming up with this brand new, amazing film, Chemistry Eases the Pain, where can they go in these last, like, as of when we're talking, I think there's seven or eight days left?
I think it's six.
Six! Okay. Well, for folks who are tuning in, there's a couple of days left. Yeah. Where can they go to help support you?
So find us on Indiegogo. You can search us for Chemistry Eases the Pain, or you can go to igg.me/@chemistryfilm. I know, it's a lot to remember. But anyway, but if you find us on Indiegogo, you can support us there. Like I said, if you want to give us a shout out on social media, that would be great, because we just need a big push at the end.
Awesome. Okay, well, for everyone who is listening and hears this, before the end date, what day does it wrap up?
The end of February, so that's the 28th.
Okay, so everyone who's hearing this before February 28th, 2019, click the links right down below in the show notes so that you can go check out the promo video that's up on Indiegogo and support and share and promote all the places, because we want more awesome content from Shine Louise Houston and crew. So thank you so much for being here and telling us a little bit about it, Shine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.